Lorca abused our idealism. And make no mistake, Discovery is no longer Lorca's. She is ours. And today will be her maiden voyage. We have a duty to perform, and we will not accept a no-win scenario. You have your orders? On your way.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the
bridge... We are Starfleet, Cam.
Yes.
Yeah, this is Tyler Orton. And I don't know if the listeners know this, but we are Starfleet.
And we have a very special guest, our own personal torchbearer, David Boris.
Thank you. Straight from the mirror universe.
Right on. Dave, we have had you on the show a number of times.
Well, actually, it's the other Dave. I'm the mirror universe Dave.
Oh, right. That's true. Okay. So This is the first time that you've been on, but your counterpart, we had a fun, I think a very memorable discussion was Star Trek versus Star Wars.
Yep.
And for those listeners out there, Prime Dave came down on Star Wars over Star Trek, but Mirror Universe Dave.
You're really setting him up to fail right now for this episode.
I guess but Mirror Universe Dave, I guess he's more in favor of Star Trek, right?
Yeah,
that's very true. Could you turn on the lights if you don't mind? It's a little bright in here.
I know, you're drops squinting. In your eyes, yeah.
Oh, well, it's a biological difference.
Of course. It's canon. Now, if you're wondering why we're here this week, it's because we're here to wrap up the first season of Star Trek Discovery with an episode we're calling Star Trek Discovery, Best First Season Ever?
Question mark?
Yes.
Yeah. We wanted to sit on this because, of course, Discovery just wrapped up, but I think you and I, Cam, we really kind of wanted to absorb what had happened. You and I spent... how many weeks just like going over everything? And we always had to cast kind of a critical eye on things, and we didn't really get the chance to, I guess, breathe to a certain degree. Because listeners, I mean, you guys have been following our blogs, our videos, our podcast, our lamentations about like just life in general.
Right.
You know? So this has been great to just sit back and kind of think about what this show adds up to. And I think Dave is a great guest here. We were debating like what would be kind of the right moment to bring Dave on and share his thoughts on this. And I think it's actually perfect.
I was pushing
here.
For Lethe. That was the episode I was really pushing for.
Or CV Pac and Parabellum, where they go camping.
Yeah, that's a nice one.
Yeah. So, but Dave, thanks for joining us. And I think before we really kick it off and get into the weeds here, just tell us a little bit about, very broadly, what do you think of Star Trek Discovery?
I really, really enjoyed this series. This was a fantastic season for so many reasons. I could, we will go on and we'll get into the weeds, I'm sure, eventually. But I definitely enjoyed the season as a whole. I thought it was a big success.
Okay, if I could throw this question to you, is there a particular episode? Because I think a lot of listeners, they kind of like these touchstone episodes where they can be like, oh, okay, I get where he's coming from. If that's like episode number one in his book.
Yeah, I think, as a military historian, I love the Battle of the Binary Stars. Simply, that was just awesome.
Yeah.
Just like a wicked way to kick off a season. But I also
And it was all just a letdown after episode two?
No, it was, but just no more battles, really. No more serious battles. But I do, I did like that, though, episode where the Discovery, warped. I don't know how to use a better word. Warped around the great Klingon ship and destroyed it.
Into the forest I go.
Yeah, that one was cool. I thought that was really
that's
neat.
A definite highlight, I thought, too.
I was, like, blown away by the creativity of that episode and just the visuals of it. I thought it was awesome.
Can I ask you, and I'm putting you on the spot here, but is there a particular episode that you found forgettable or one maybe you just didn't really care for all that much?
I didn't really care for the whole arc of that animal they found.
The Ripper.
Yeah. I found that really odd.
Cam liked the tardigrade.
I did like it.
Tardigrade, yeah. It was something that didn't catch me.
Okay. It was a very original series to me. I don't know.
It was very original. Oh, but for me, maybe...
Devil in the Dark all the way. Like, I did one of the blogs where I was comparing this to the Horta that we met in Devil in the Dark, and there's some very intriguing parallels between those episodes. So, yeah. Okay. What about a favorite character? Just like, I'm, you are going to have to just pick one. Tell me right now who your favorite character is.
Philippa Georgiou in, from the Dark Universe.
Really?
Yeah, oh, really?
Loved her. Loved her.
We're going to have a lot to talk about, Dave. I'm warning you right now.
Okay, let me just throw one more in, though. I wanted to meet Tilly from the dark, from the Mirror Universe.
You mean Killy?
Yeah.
Killy?
Yeah, that's what her Dark Captain Universe Killy. Name was.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to meet her.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
Well, and that's something I'll be bringing up later on this episode as well. It's we maybe did not get to meet as many of these counterparts as
Mirror Universe Milton Richter.
I would have been all over that, you know. So, not in the way it sounds.
Right.
That was
no.
Weird.
I wouldn't blame you either way.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. So yeah. So I guess maybe the jumping off point here, Cam and Dave, that we can have fun with is. How does Star Trek Season 1 of Discovery stack up versus the other first seasons of Star Trek? Because this is kind of the big thing going in. Star Trek premiered in... Well, Star Trek The Next Generation premiered during a very different time in television. And where I think you could viewers could give TV shows a lot more leeway in like how long it took them to kind of find their footing. And so I am curious about like how much leeway current A, audiences have, and B... just creators have for doing that. So, Dave, you're the guest. Like, for you, overall, like, what do you think... Okay, what do you think is, like, your least favorite season one of Star Trek, of this franchises that are the series that you've seen? And then where would you place Discovery within that continuum there?
Well, I could get hated at this table, but I dislike...
Already are, so...
Yeah, it's good. TNG's first season. I hated it. I thought that was... really weak, really lost. Yep. It was just weird to me. When I look back on it, it doesn't even seem to fit anything in my mind.
Right.
Besides Q, of course. But sure. So that one was probably my least liked. Where does Discovery sit? It's one of my favorite. Okay. I gotta say, like I really enjoyed this season. And you know, now if we think about it, like I've watched every first season and almost every series in its entirety many times now, and we've discussed many of the aspects of different parts of it. So there was some high hopes for this, and I felt that overall it met my high hopes. So now, can I say it's the best first season ever? I always really like DS9 start. I always like the first season of Enterprise, but it's up there, definitely.
Cam, what about you?
For me, the only one I would say was a great first season is the original series. But I mean, there's a lot of rough ones. I mean, I think Next Generation, as you said, Dave, I think is pretty much an atrocious show until you get to season 3.
Yep.
There are good episodes in between. Like you'll find like a Measure of a Man in season 2. Or
like
something.
A Data Lore.
Data Lore. There's good episodes, but they're few and far between. And the ones that are bad are so abysmally bad
that
they're almost like unwatchable.
Like what would you be able to compare like a season 1 Next Gen episode to Discovery? I don't even think they're on the same plane.
No. Yeah, like we weren't big fans of CV Pakkum Parabellum. There's nothing that compares, you know, like in the like that if that's the worst episode in Discovery's first season, like it's head and shoulders above most of season 1 and 2 of Next Generation.
There was that revelation that Kyle Riker likes to go trout fishing, so there's a great comparison right there.
But I mean, DS9, I think the first season is rough, but it has some really, really great episodes.
Yep.
Like you have Duet. I think the premiere is quite strong.
Yeah.
Yep.
The finale is quite good.
Yep.
There's some, you know, they were finding their footing. There's a lot of Bajoran episodes that are a little dry.
I keep going back to Progress with Kira and the farmer and her trying to get the farmer to leave the land. And I'm like, why am I watching this for 47 minutes?
Yeah, there's also like the one where like Odo's investigating like a killer or something who's like in a new body or something. Oh, it was just an awful episode. Yeah. It's early on. But to me, I think... I would say Voyager and Enterprise are consistent. I think they're okay. I think they're decent. But I don't think they stand out. I think the original series is the only one to me that is just like pretty much a home run. It's a little bit bumpy off the bat, but it has all-timer episodes strewn throughout.
Would it be accurate to say that maybe for you, Discovery season 1 would be number 2 out of all 6?
It is the Riker.
It is the Riker?
Yeah. Actually, well, that doesn't make any sense. No, he's the number 1. But I'm thinking of number 1 is the Picard. So,
okay.
Whatever, this is just getting confused. No, I would say yes, Discovery is my second place after the original series.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I look at the original series, and there are some weird episodes. you know, like, say, Miri, for example. But there's also some great ones. We've got City on the Edge of Forever. We have Space Seed. We've got Balance of Terror.
Yeah.
You know, I agree. I think TOS Season 1 is probably my favorite. I think it's just so many highs, even though there are some lows. I'd rank Discovery after that. And this might surprise you guys. I actually think Voyager probably is the next strongest Season 1. I don't know exactly if Voyager excels, you know, consistently season to season beyond that, but let me just share this. I think
you really like the Beowulf episode, don't you?
I'll say this. There's some real clunkers, like some real clunkers. But, you know, you've got Caretaker, which I think is a very strong pilot. It really sets up the universe. I don't know if they really cultivate the rest of the universe that they set up following that.
Right.
But you've got some very strong episodes. You have Eye of the Needle. You have Jatrell. You have Phage. You've got Faces. Like, this is a pretty strong, a lot of standouts from Season 1 that I do like. Afterwards, DS9. I dig that. You guys mentioned Duet. I think Emissary is a very strong way to kick off the series. And then from there, it just kind of by default, I guess it has to be Enterprise. And David, you were worried you're going to get yelled at, but honestly, I think that TNG, I don't think you're going to get very many arguments from the hosts here. I think TNG is far and away the least consistent, way more lows than any other series. I really think it is the weakest Season 1 out of all of Star Trek at this point.
I just did a rewatch of Deep Space Nine's first. I'm on Season 4 now, but so I rewatched Season 1 of DS9 not so long ago, and it was pretty painless. The idea of rewatching the entirety of like TNG Season 1 is like, ooh.
I tried to do it, and I couldn't. I had to skip forward, like you said, to Season 3. I think I went to Season 4, but
right.
You're definitely right. Like Season 3 or Season 4, TNG picks up.
I mean, I would watch Encounter at Farpoint again, just for curiosity's sake.
Sure, Data Lore. Yep.
And I like Data Lore, but beyond Data
Even
Lore...
Conspiracy, I like.
Yeah, okay, Data Lore, Conspiracy, but beyond that... Was the Neutral Zone the season finale?
Yeah.
Okay, I like the Neutral Zone.
That was a great episode, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that
but
was cool.
Beyond that, I'm just like, a lot of painful...
Super painful.
...episodes to watch. So. Right. So, guys, I think here, we can get to the fun part, though, and let's talk about why we... are enjoying, like, the three of us, we like Star Trek Discovery Season 1. We all ranked it number 2 on our lists here, right? Or no, Dave.
Well, I'm
where
I'm,
would you rank this one?
Boy, I don't know. I mean, I don't think
you're
I can
intimidated now thinking
yeah,
about
a
the
little
original
bit.
Series.
Yeah, that's right. I just think I can't rank it. I'm not as knowledgeable about it as you guys are.
Obviously,
but
no,
obviously.
We could tell you that.
Yeah, I'm not as good looking as you guys are either. And
that's not what the listeners say.
For those that don't get the reference or who maybe don't follow our YouTube videos, Cam and I, we posted a video in the last couple of weeks, and more than one commenter on YouTube told us we were really ugly. So I found that amusing.
Yeah,
it didn't hurt my feelings. I just found it amusing more than
it hurt my feelings.
I know. I appreciate that you are so attuned to just empathy and everything. Yeah,
I'm very empathetic.
Well, you're like Counselor Troy.
Yeah. From the Mirror Universe, though.
Oh. Okay.
You know, I read a Star Trek book once, the only Star Trek book I ever read, and it was about Counselor Troy in the Mirror Universe.
Oh,
it was
really?
The whole plot
really?
Of it. Yeah. Huh. I couldn't tell you the title. It was like years ago, but it was really twisted, and she was like this sort of sexually aggressive.
Is this why you read it?
I was young.
What drew you to that book, though? Like,
oh, Cam, I think you know the answer.
No, I am curious, though.
I just Googled sexy Star Trek.
Because I've like only read like a couple Star Trek books too, so
honestly, as I remember it, I just picked it up and then read the back, and it was talking about Mirror Universe,
okay.
Right? Yeah.
But I think this is why this season also appealed to me, is because in sort of expand, I don't know if they call it expanded universe in Star Trek, but in that equivalent of it, in non-canonical kind of stuff, I'd already read about this Mirror Universe that was like a much more hardcore kind of violent, aggressive universe. So,
right.
In a weird way, I'd already kind of learned a bit about it prior to any show. Kind of dealing with it, which was kind of weird. And I never put the connection together, but anyways, I just want to throw that out there.
Okay. So, as much as I appreciate the sexy Troy digression there, why don't we jump into what we're enjoying about Star Trek Discovery? And Cam, you take it away here. I mean, what are some of the strengths or maybe some highlights that you think are worth bringing up for, like, what is Discovery doing right at this point?
Well, I want to talk about a moment that I think a lot of people really got into, and that is the party scene in the episode Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad. Now, it sounds kind of goofy right up front. Like, what's your favorite part? The party scene. to me, this is what the show did best, was that, you know, you had these scenes where we had the characters bouncing off each other in a fun way.
The hangout factor.
Exactly. And to me, this scene, like, personified the best version of that we saw this first season on Discovery. There was good ones strewn throughout the series, but to me, this scene is, like, what this series needs to tap into a little more. A lot of it was very plot-heavy. We had episodes that were driven entirely by moving on to the next episode. And I think it's moments like this that are the heart of what Star Trek is.
No, I totally agree with you, Cam. I think the hangout factor here, you're actually the one that pointed out to me, and it wasn't something I really realized at the time when I was watching Star Trek Next Generation, but 10 Ford was a pretty boring place.
Sure.
And as much as I liked hanging out with the characters, I mean, there was no ambience to it. It seemed kind of depressing to go to, despite the fact that you have some cool characters hanging out there. But I didn't ever got that sense with, you know, magic to make the sanest man go mad. Like, that seemed like it was lived in, and people are actually enjoying each other's company. And I think that hangout factor is critical to why so many people are drawn to Star Trek.
Yeah, and I mean, we also have made fun of the French bar on Voyager. And maybe a little bit less, but the beach party, you know, on Voyager as well. But, like, I think these scenes are so important to kind of character building and letting the audience kind of bask in just watching these personalities bounce off one another. And I think that's something Discovery needs to work a little more on. But I think there was enough examples of it in season one to give me hope that they will do more of it.
Well, yeah, there's one in the finale that I'll highlight here. But and as much as we spent way too much time in that Orion encampment on Kronos,
right,
I did love the moment where Tilly was just walking around with Burnham as they were eating the space whale.
Right.
By accident, and just talking about their relationships. And it's just like this sense of camaraderie that I really did appreciate that. And it's kind of into that hangout factor, those human moments that I think is so important for Star Trek. But Dave, where do you come on this? Like are you big into Discovery's focus on character, or what's your opinion here?
I'm kind of mixed. I mean, I think you guys make a really good point. I think that's it's an important thing for any show to build those characters. There's no question about it. But at the same time, I think we could all critique many, many Star Trek episodes for doing that too much, and in frankly, not a good enough way, and
right.
not a way that actually makes you believe these characters are actually friends. So, it's a balance,
like,
for me.
Crusher and Troy doing aerobics.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Even though we know they're friends, you know, but it didn't translate. You know, I always loved the TNG's poker game.
Yeah, that's a great example.
That was great. Those were great moments. And
the best was when Tom Riker crashed it, and it was the most uncomfortable poker game we ever got to witness.
Yeah.
Like, Will and Tom were just going at it with each other. So you can tell I just watched Second Chances just in the last
Yeah, you're
week.
All about Tom Riker right
yeah.
now.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe he'll make an appearance on Discovery somehow.
Well, he is a double. Yeah. You know, we had Mirror Universe's appearance. We had Jonathan Frakes directing in the Mirror Universe. There's so many connections. I don't know how. But
we also saw Quarks, of course, on Deep Space Nine, which is the big, you know, maybe the best hangout spot.
Oh, yeah.
We saw
no
on Star
question.
Trek.
Yeah.
And I would like to see Discovery find that. I don't know if the mess hall is going to become that.
With their IKEA furniture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they need to find some sort of space where just the characters can be. For kind of moments, just to hang out.
Would it be too cliched to find a bartender, too? You know, like a Guinan or a Quark? Like, would that just be too much starch, like, already done too many times?
Yeah, I think they've done it before, and you brought up the French bar on Voyager, and it just felt as if they were trying to repeat what we already saw in Next Gen.
Sure, there was movie night on Enterprise, so they had that.
Yeah, and at least Enterprise was trying to do something different with the most boring movie night you could ever imagine.
Yeah.
But I think Discovery needs to find something kind of unique, and I don't know if the mess hall's the best place, but there needs to be a great hangout spot, right?
Or, you know what would be interesting? What happens if they had, like, some sort of intramural sports? Like, where the crew is constantly caught up in either cheering on some sort, like, you know, you'd think with a ship that size that there'd be some sort of competitive sort of sporting event or athletic event.
And it's a much more athletic looking cast than some
totally
of the other series.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You could see them doing this. I mean, imagine if they had some sort of, I don't know, some sort of. Sure, futuristic badminton.
Sure.
You know, it'd have to have some violence in it, you know, so it'd be like...
Rollerball?
Like, yeah, rollerball. There you go. There you go. But that would be interesting if there was something they did every week where they go and check out, you know, two people competing or something.
Yeah,
like that.
And maybe a little bit more action-packed than the fencing that Picard often did.
Like, or, or the jazz club.
Oh,
remember,
yeah.
They go and check out music all the time. Yeah. Data would rock that flute like no one's business.
I just keep going back to Joe Piscopo and the Jerry Lewis...
Maybe they need to do like a hologram concert room, like in Blade Runner 2049. That would be pretty cool.
That would be cool.
With, yeah. Elvis.
Yeah, yeah, Elvis. Yeah.
Well, and everyone. Okay. I think Marilyn Monroe popped up in there.
Yeah, she did. Yeah. That,
yeah.
So okay. So we already know that they're into like Wyclef Jean and like Al Green in this particular series. What would be kind of the contemporary artists that would be featured in this concert hall, guys?
Tori Amos.
Tori Amos? Okay.
Lisa
contemporary?
Loeb?
Contemporary? What are you... What?
I don't know.
Do you know what contemporary means? I was thinking, you know, I was thinking something like Arcade Fire.
Three non-blondes?
No, I honestly, Arcade Fire. That would be. They should be listening to some Arcade Fire stuff.
You know, okay. I'm sure there's like tax credits they could cash in on because it's a Canadian band and it's filmed in Canada. Mm. So there you go.
Bare Naked Ladies.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah. Cam's just throwing out like anything he knows in the music world right now.
It's true. I know very little.
Bryan Adams.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
There's this young kid called Bryan Adams from North Van. I hear he's really popular.
Oh, no, I know. Tom Cochran. Yeah. Yeah. He's living on a highway or like, yeah. You know. Yeah. Anyway, so I want to go back to you, Dave. What is Star Trek Discovery doing right? What are, you know, some kind of highlights for you, or what's really making this show gripping in your opinion?
Well, I'm going to get my social justice warrior on, and I'm going to say that I love openly gay characters.
Right.
I thought that was fantastic. I think it was a great moment for Star Trek. I think it's a good moment for television to have this dynamic, intimate relationship between two men.
Do you have an issue with how quickly they dispatched one Dr. Culbert, though?
I thought that was really strange. That's on my that's on my things they did wrong list.
Okay.
Right.
So you jumped ahead to that, but
I apologize.
That's okay. That's okay. Let's focus on the good, then we can get to the bad. Because
no, but okay. And I think the key here is though that they normalize the relationship. My biggest fear going in is that they're going to make this like a very special episode. And the fact that they just treated it like it would any other relationship is the key here. And I think a big part of it...
It may have actually been dealt with better than a lot of the relationships on all the Star Trek series.
I agree with you, Cam. Yeah. I think that's a great point.
I think like the one prior to this that had been dealt with best is the Jadzia Worf relationship. Yeah. You know?
Oh, yeah.
You look at other stuff. Although I like the trip into Paul.
Sure.
Like,
there's a little bit of weirdness, though.
That, there's a lot of weirdness and ickiness.
Yeah.
But I think... What are the other contenders, really?
B'Elanna and Tom?
Picard and Crusher, maybe, at some level.
The will they, won't they?
Yeah, the will they, won't they?
But that's true with Troy and Riker. And then we have the weird Neelix and Kes stuff. That was just like...
No good.
And
please don't ever bring up the Chakotay and Seven thing.
I was about
again.
To bring that up.
It makes my skin crawl.
I know.
So like, I felt like the Dr. Culber and Stamets stuff, it felt like the type of relationship that you can actually invest in. Like, they're actually fun to watch together on screen, which I wouldn't say about Burnham and Ash Tyler. Like, they, to me, did not have the charisma together as a couple that Stamets and Culber did.
I'll say this. I think Wilson Cruz benefits a lot with having, like, this history with Anthony Rapp. Like, they've worked together before on stage. Like, they've known each other for a long, long time.
Oh, I had no idea.
And I think the issue here with Burnham and Tyler is that it was more of a plot point where they need to make these characters get together regardless of whether or not there's natural chemistry. Whereas we've seen the other characters like Jadzia and Worf. That one worked really well. Those two actors had some great chemistry together.
Absolutely.
So they're going to put Tyler and Burnham together no matter what, and regardless of whether their chemistry popped. And I don't think that they really had chemistry together, which was unfortunate.
No, I agree. I didn't see... It wasn't as believable. Let's put it that way. I didn't think. But the other two characters certainly did.
So beyond Stamets and Culbert, like, who do you think, I don't know, relationship-wise has some kind of possibility here?
Actually, you know what relationship I thought was actually interesting was the Admiral and Lorca. I thought that was really good. I thought like they had a really interesting like two warriors that had kind of been out in the field together. But when they're together, they're lovers. And then...
I knew you were a big Leithy fan. I knew it. Yeah.
Well, there you go. It's come out.
Cam and I, we discussed this earlier, like when that episode, when Leithy aired, like it was nice to see a stud of an actor hooking up with an age appropriate woman. Where it's like you don't really get to see that all that often with a lot of actresses. You know, like somebody Cornwell's age, like same age as Jason Isaacs, you're going to assume that he's going to be hooking up with someone who's like 30 years his junior.
That was in the Mirror Universe.
That was in the Mirror Universe.
Definitely in the Mirror Universe. Yeah.
So it makes me wonder what happens if Prime Lorca ever pops up again, like where the relationship goes from here.
There could be some really great stories to come out of that if we ever do get Prime Lorca. But I mean, that whole storyline in Lethe was my favorite part of that episode, was watching the Admiral and yep. what we thought at the time was Prime Lorca
yeah.
kind of dealing with his past. And to me, there was some great like adult storytelling yep. going on in that episode. And it was kind of a bummer that it really doesn't amount to a whole lot. But the episode on itself, you know, in that aspect was quite strong.
So another highlight for me, or something that I think Discovery did well, was cultivating one particular character who you would not normally think of as being so key to Star Trek, but I think the whole Laurel factor
yeah.
was quite fascinating to me, but it was also something that had the potential to be very frustrating for us as viewers. And Cam, you and I went back and forth a lot where, does Laurel know what she's doing here? Is she making it up as she goes along? Are her plans falling apart, or is she just this genius mastermind? And whatever it was, and we can get into it later on, but for Laurel, I think the actress, Mary Chifo, was fantastic. She had this yeah. certain, like, just magnetism that drew you into her storyline. And I don't know what character I could compare to within Star Trek canon. Like, she seems like such a unique kind of entity where she tells Voke at the very beginning, like, I'm here to be your champion. I'm not here to take power from you. Let me help you. I believe in your cause. And from there on out, she just seems to be, I don't want to say ahead of the game, because she spent about half of the season inside the brig.
Yeah.
But by the end of it, I was very pleased where we left this character. She had a fully realized arc where she ends up reluctantly assuming kind of control of, you know, I guess the Klingon Empire as we know it right now.
Yeah. I would agree with that. One of the things, though, I don't think that she was some mastermind, though. I think,
oh, no. Cam and I, we don't think she... by the end of the season, we did not believe that either.
No, I think she was an opportunist.
Right.
I think she got lucky.
Right.
And then took advantage of it.
Yeah. I mean, she was a character who was so charismatic, though, that you believed she knew a lot more than she seemed to.
you brought up Into the Forest I Go earlier on. That was one of your favorite episodes as well. And Cam and I, we were very confused about what exactly her plans were in that episode, where she's dragging Cornwall's body around.
Yeah.
She's getting war paint on her face from Cole. We had no idea what we were supposed to make of any of this.
And she's like, was it jumping on Ash Tyler's back or whatever to beam out of there?
Yeah.
And so it seemed like that was part of her game, was to get onto Discovery or something, possibly. That's where it got a little muddy.
I always thought her objective was to get on Discovery.
That's what it would seem like.
But then what did she accomplish?
No, nothing. I mean, I guess as the writers, they accomplished her respecting Cornwall, but...
Or I guess, yeah. you know, like, she wanted to be with Voke, so that's why she jumped on Ash Tyler's back.
And by having her on the ship, they could kind of build up the relationship between her and the crew to at least a bit of a degree, so that when you get to the finale...
But she interacted with Saru, and she interacted with Cornwall and Tyler.
Yeah.
So those three, okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's something.
And, Michael, obviously, but...
Yeah, so when you get to that finale, she at least has some face time with these people, as opposed to her just being kind of... maybe, like, if she'd been separated, it would literally be like Ash Tyler being like, hey, that woman, you know, that Klingon there, that's Laurel. We can trust her, which isn't as compelling as having her actually on the ship face off against these people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm okay with it. And but to me, the character was so riveting that I just was so happy to have her there, because I think a lot of people were concerned when they did the Klingon redesign that, you know, okay, these Klingons look weird. But I was like, okay, well, hopefully we get some great Klingon characters out of this. Because I'm not, like, the world's biggest Klingon guy. But I was like, please, God, let us have some really strong Klingon characters. And I don't think we really did.
How much can they bench?
But, you know, Laurel was, like, the real standout to me. Like, she was the best Klingon character.
You say that, though, but I would say Voke was intriguing to me as
Voke well. Voke is a tough one, because I would agree with you to a certain degree, except we only really get to know Voke in four episodes or whatever, three episodes.
But, like, those, like, three episodes?
Yeah. No, he is very interesting.
Like, as soon as the premiere aired, I was on IMDb trying to look up the actor, because I was like, this is like an intriguing character. I like the performance. Like, why have I never heard of this dude before?
Yeah.
Where Voke ends up by the end of season one, we can maybe get into that later on. But I think that the Klingons that were introduced here, even Cole, who could have been just this boring, generic guy, by Into the Forest I Go, He's picking his teeth with Giorgio's Delta. He's having like this real badass showdown with Burnham.
Cole had like really awesome moments, but I wouldn't say he's a great character.
No, no.
He was a great bad guy.
Sure. He was a strong bad guy.
He was a cannibal.
And he had a cape. Like, I dig the cape.
Yeah. But apparently capes went out in the Klingon world after this.
Yeah. Who's the next caped Star Trek character? Like, beyond this, because we've seen a couple of capes show up, say, in the Mirror Universe, for example. We also had Harry Mudd's father-in-law wearing a cape. But do we see many capes in the original series or next gen or anything?
Do we get Trelane popping up in an episode?
Didn't the Romulans wear capes in the original series?
They had the helmets.
I think the Romulans wore capes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to die on that hill.
Yeah. Me neither.
I could be totally wrong. I mean, I'm probably not because I'm always right. But. Okay.
So the Klingon stuff, though, let's touch on this a little bit. Doesn't have to be a criticism. Ultimately, the new revamped look for the Klingons. How'd that work for you, Dave?
Hated it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you ever get used to it? Did you ever come to like it?
No, it threw me off right from the start, and I just could not accept it. To me, Klingons look like Worf. That's the Klingon that I see, and I think about Gowron, etc. And I just, I couldn't get onto it.
Would you have been okay if they looked like the Klingons from the original series?
Absolutely I would have. That would have made way more sense to me. It would have been, like, in terms of canon, in terms of timeline, that would have made way more sense. Or if they had done something mid-series to explain why they look different.
We got to go back to Enterprise. This just creates so many problems because they try to explain an Enterprise and then they roll back on that here.
Yeah.
And it just, you're kind of scratching your head. Cam, you and I, we've kind of... I've made peace with it as well.
But it is very hard for me still to watch these Klingons and be like, yep, just like Worf. You know what I mean? Like, they just don't seem to belong in the same species as Worf.
But you know what? If all they did was just give them hair,
I
would have been so much better with it.
Yeah. Or if there was different houses looked differently. I mean, it's a large planet. Like different, even on Earth, different people look differently.
Well, you know, they made an effort with, say, costume design to distinguish them. So I will give them props for that. You know, like, Laurel is consistently wearing, like, this white outfit. We have T'Kuvma with the gold versus Cole in the cape. We've got Dines, who's got the jewelry on her face. You know, Voke, he's got the white skin. They are making an effort to make them distinct looking, so...
Yet they all look the same in terms of, like, their physical body type.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you took away all the clothing and... Yes.
Where is this going, Tyler?
Get your mind out of the gutter, Cam. Take away all the clothing and you just put them face-to-face-to-face, I would have a tough time distinguishing so-and-so from so-and-so, right? Yep. But let's talk about maybe the reason why we had this big revamp. And it was only for a plot point in that they wanted to trick the audience into investing in this character Voke and then revealing that it was Ash Tyler because they wanted to have so much makeup caked on this actor that you were not supposed to know that they were one and the same. And so you kind of wonder if it was all worth it in the end.
Well, listen, I mean, like, you could have done, you already did the albino aspect of it. Why not make him look different? Why doesn't he just look different? Okay. You have all the other Klingons looking somewhat familiar, somewhat similar to Klingons, either from TOS or from TNG.
Right.
But then you have this one Klingon who stands out. And not only do they make fun of his skin or the fact that he doesn't have a house, but they make fun of the way he looks. Like, literally making fun of the way he looks. Like, he supposedly is some sort of deformed Klingon.
Sure.
Right.
It makes
that, that would have been a very simple way to kind of resolve that particular plot point.
Without changing the whole physiology of the Klingons we know.
My big concern, though, is going forward is that they want to try to reconcile these different looks, and we're going to end up with some episode that's very heavy-handed, very much like we saw in Affliction and Divergence from Enterprise, where that was not a good two-parter, where they tried to explain the whole Klingon stuff. So I'm not looking forward to how they kind of resolve this, if they ever do try.
And I thought it was odd that, you know, we see these Klingons, which look so drastically different from the original, you know, the other versions of that we've seen. And I'm like, initially, I'm like, okay, well, they're obviously doing a visual reboot because we have, like, you know, holograms, throughout the show. It looks visually different than all the others. But then we get, like, the Orions and we get the Andorians and we get the Tellarites and they all look kind of similar to their previous versions. Maybe a little more updated just to fit, you know, what they can do now with makeup.
Tellarites, bit more of a drastic.
Sure, but they still look recognizable from like the Enterprise version.
It's kind of that swine motif.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure, but like the Klingons just look so radically different, and it's like, okay, well, sure.
Yeah.
Had they changed them all up a lot, I'd be like, well, I guess if we got to complain about one, we got to complain about them all.
Yep.
You know, but in this way, it really stands out. The Klingons are like the sole ones that look like wildly different.
I feel like that they're going to regret. I think they're going to regret this in the long term. I think they're going to look back and go, we probably should have thought of a different way to do this.
I think they already regret it.
Maybe.
Do you think there's anyone in part of that production looking around saying, this is a great idea?
Oh, it's an echo chamber in some of these places. Yeah. Maybe it was. You know, maybe everyone's like, yes.
I read an interview with Alex Kurtzman where he was talking about how much people love CV Pack on Parabellum.
Yeah, but that, I mean, to me, it's like it could be
the mythical people of the street
told him. You know what? To me, it screams like one person said something on Twitter, and he's using that as a jumping off
point. But isn't that sometimes what they use?
It is.
Yeah.
Or someone's kid at home was like, this is awesome, Dad.
Yeah. Like maybe their kids came and toured the set, saw the new Klingons, were like, these look awesome. Yeah. And they're like, job well done.
Yeah, we'll sell a million toys.
Aren't they kind of aware of what viewers are articulating or problematic about this? I would hope that they're aware.
I would hope so. I feel like Kirsten Beyer, who's, you know, in the writer's room, is probably the one with her finger on the pulse of what's going on to a certain degree. Yeah. So hopefully she's kind of maybe passing some notes.
Okay. Have there been any major Star Trek conventions this season?
No.
So
I guess the closest would be Star Trek San Francisco.
Yeah.
Which Cam and I attended. And it was fascinating. Like the only Discovery talk that we got was from Michael Dorn.
Jonathan Frakes acknowledged it as well.
That's true. He said he wasn't allowed to talk about it too much because he got in trouble last time. But the intriguing thing that Dorn actually described a little bit about what the Klingons were originally supposed to look like in Discovery when Brian Fuller was still attached to it, because they had actually pitched Michael Dorn to come in and cameo in this. And he said that they did not really resemble what we ended up seeing on screen on Discovery. He mentioned, weren't they going to have CG eyes or something, Cam? Does that ring a bell? Yeah,
that does ring a bell.
Yeah, so they were going to look drastically different, but just not the way that they eventually ended up here on Discovery. So,
I guess one would assume then that the next Star Trek convention, now that Discovery's done the full season, they've completed a season, I can imagine this will be a big discussion. And, you know, the minute...
Yeah, hopefully they can kind of open up a little more about the process of season one, because when we saw them last summer... They couldn't really talk about anything.
That's right. That's
other than just kind of being like, "Yeah, we put a lot of thought into this. Fans are going to love it." You know, that sort of stuff.
Now it's like now the fans can actually say like, "Yeah, we're unhappy with this, and we need to know why you approached it." Or maybe
why
maybe
did you do this?
Or
why
maybe
did you
we're
do it?
Yeah, maybe we're in the minority, and maybe maybe everyone else loves it. And it's just,
I don't think people like the new Klingons.
Well, we'll find out what people say on YouTube next video you guys have.
The one thing I do remember from that Star Trek convention, Cam, though, is that Akiva Goldsman was talking all about how much he was a fan of Kirsten Beyer's script for CV Pock and Parabellum.
Yeah.
We didn't know at the time that it was CV Pock and Parabellum, but he had mentioned that she wrote a script that was very Saru heavy, and that turned out to be CV Pock and Parabellum.
Which, according to IMDb, is the lowest rated episode of the season.
Yeah, so...
Do you know what the highest was?
Do I want to know?
It was Vaulting Ambition.
Okay.
Which was one of my least favorite episodes of the season.
It was probably my least favorite episode.
I think the two episodes we picked as the weakest are both the most lowest liked and the least liked by IMDb users. I thought that was interesting.
Well, you and I are not the ones that had the finger on the pulse of fandom.
No, we don't know anything. Sure. We're clueless.
Yeah. I do.
I know you do. Okay.
Well, so I wanted to talk about something else I really liked about this season, which was Saru. Saru is a character who was very problematic, I think, for a lot of the season. But to me, those last few episodes in the Mirror Universe arc, where we got basically our first real alien captain on a show, I thought he was great. And it's a character that, I was on board 100% before the show started. I was like, here we go. You know, they're pitching this as, the next kind of Data character or Spock character. I am watching this character right from the second he first appears on screen. And then I began to get more and more frustrated as we got through the episodes until we got to the Mirror Universe. And it's like, you know, the pieces clicked onto the right track and we got this very, I thought, inspirational captain figure who was also smart. And he was very much unlike any captain we've seen before on any other Star Trek show. And I, am dreading the fact that they may potentially have a new captain for season two, because I actually think they were on the right track by having Saru as a captain.
Dave, what do you think of the Saru character? Because I'm going to get into it in just a moment.
Sure.
But I want to hear your thoughts first, because this
I'm sorry, Tyler.
I mean, I agree with Cam. This was a character that was problematic for me, but by the end of season one, I came to, like, he's probably one of my favorite characters now, and that's not the way it started here.
I really loved the long play on his character, like this long arc, the long development.
Long legs, too.
Long legs, long arms, long everything, long tentacles out the back neck, all those things.
Yeah. long lasting taste.
Yeah. Exactly.
It'll last a little longer.
Anyways, I really enjoyed this character. I enjoyed his arc. I liked him in the end. I found him annoying in the beginning, but I appreciated the payoff of all that. That's what really, like, for me, made it very strong, is that in the first few episodes, I was like, oh, this guy's so annoying. But then by the end, I was like, what a turnaround. But it was a natural turnaround. It was an organic turnaround. It didn't feel like they had taken this character that they didn't develop. They used his attributes that they had already established early in the season.
Yeah.
And then they had made those heroic attributes, which we thought were sort of cowardice, or which we thought were like weak or whatever, passive attributes. And so I think they did a really good job. In fact, I would probably say that the best writing for any character was him.
It's interesting.
Well, he has a very clear arc from episode 1 to episode 15. Although I say clear arc, and Cam, you and I, we were asking ourselves a lot throughout the mid part of the season, like, what is this character doing? Where is he going?
But you got to think that, I mean, that was the point, right?
Well, okay, so let me get into it here. Episodes 1-2, I love the dynamic between Giorgio, Burnham, and Saru, where it's very clear that Giorgio respects the opinions of both Saru and Burnham. But Burnham and Saru, they're not buddies.
They are not like friends. The squabbling siblings, you know, vying for their mom's attention, essentially.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we see Saru as a character who I like that. I like that he was offering kind of the counterpoint to what Burnham was offering. And then we bring him on to Discovery. I was like, okay, like, he obviously has very good reasons for resenting Burnham.
He had some great scenes with her in the first couple episodes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Blueberries.
Sure.
I actually like that walk down the corridor, you know? But then we get to Choose Your Pain. And I think, so if point A is the kind of prelude, those first two episodes, point B is Choose Your Pain, where we actually see Saru in command while Lorca has been kidnapped by the Klingons. And he's got the great moment on the view screen where he realizes that there's kind of the predator versus the prey with regards to the Klingon shuttles. And I'm like, okay, Saru gets that. Even though he's being undermined by Stamets throughout this episode, and I think that was probably one of Saru's low points, where, like, Saru just blows up at Stamets, and it doesn't really look great on the character.
Yeah.
And then from there, he really has nothing to do until CV Pock and Parabellum, which, Cam, you and I, we think that's one of the low points of Discovery Season 1. And then after that, we've got Into the Forest I Go, which is an action-packed episode. We've got the first two episodes of the Mirror Universe, which is jam-packed. He just seemed very kind of
lost
for an extended period of time. And we're looking at this guy. You've got everything going for him. You've got Doug Jones as the actor. You've got the probably one of the most unique looks for a main character that we've ever seen. There's internal conflict between him and the main character of this entire story, but it just seemed as if he was just floating in this weird way.
Well, we were sitting there for weeks going, what does this character want? And we really didn't know.
And that's kind of the key thing that, I mean, listeners know I have that big issue with Lorca as well, where I'm asking, when I do the season one rewatch before season two starts, I'm going to be asking the whole time, what does a character like Lorca want? What is his motivation? And it's not clear until we get to the Mirror Universe. But with Saru, I think the writers realized where they wanted to have him by the end of season one, which is great, but they did not know what to do with him in between. And I think that was actually a deficit on the part of the writers. Like, that was something that they really struggled with, and they actually did a bad job with, like, with how do you actually put this character into play in a way that he's an active player or a character with agency, where,
well, it often felt like he was kind of sitting on the sidelines waiting for Lorca to leave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, But, you know, when you give him that big moment where he's giving the speech to the crew about, you know, this is our discovery and this will be her maiden voyage, I am so on board.
Yep. Yeah.
It's like, give me this. Honestly, I would be happy with this character for multiple seasons.
Just as a captain, though?
Yeah, exploring him as a captain.
Oh, no. I think he's a better support character. I couldn't.
Well, I think we know the captain will always be a support character on this show.
Sure, that's fair. Yeah. I think he's a better support to the leader of the crew as opposed to the leader of the crew in terms of rank.
I wanted to leave this conversation to the very end, okay. But let's get into it right now because we're talking about Saru. I was thinking about where do we go with Discovery in season two, and why don't we just talk about like what we do with the Saru captain question going forward? Because my big fear I would love to see Saru as captain. The permanent captain aboard the Discovery when season two begins. The issue is he's not the main character. This is Burnham's story. So you are going to have a character, Burnham, who it's established, even if she's not correct in her execution, she is correct in spirit. She has, which I think is a kind of a problematic character trait, which means that she's going to be constantly undermining Saru.
Yeah, especially Saru.
And it's going to take away everything that makes Saru great as this leader and captain. He's yep. going to actually become really bad to watch again. And that's why I'm very fearful of Saru becoming captain, because everything we loved about him being in command in the last, you know, let's say 6-7 episodes of the season, it's going to be taken away if, you know, Burnham is the main character, because she is always right. She has the right idea. So that's why I don't know what to do with the whole captain seat issue going forward on Star Trek Discovery.
Is it possible that somehow Burnham gets the chair?
Eventually.
I think so. I think that's what they've been kind of hinting at. So does that mean sometime in season two we're going to get Burnham in the captain seat?
Is it possible that Saru does like a recognition, like I'm not actually meant for the chair.
Right.
You have the Kirk-esque qualities, even and I don't.
But we've seen at this point that he does have those qualities.
Yeah, that's a very good
point.
And
I like the fact that he is a very unique commanding officer versus what we've seen in other iterations of Star Trek. I can find a lot of parallels between Burnham and Janeway, Burnham and Sisko, Burnham and Picard. I don't know if I can find those with Saru. So
right. Yeah, just because of his whole background is so completely it's different.
Unique, yeah,
it's otherworldly.
And Cam already said it's a Spock, it's a Data. It's
right.
It's not a captain. At least in terms of like the qualities you can recognize in the character.
Well, he's the outsider.
Yeah.
So.
And I like the idea of an outsider captain.
Yeah.
So
I have no idea where they're going to go in season two. Like, I can't even fathom. I couldn't make it up.
Well, I mean, from like a story or plot point, I have no idea. But we'll go into it later. There's ideas that I have where they should focus on or what would make the series even stronger.
I mean, to the credit of the writers, they have surprised me a lot. Where, like, I would, you know, watch an episode, which was kind of setting up the next episode, and be like, I know where this is going. And I was almost never right. So yeah, sometimes that proved not to be so great. I was like, oh, that was a little bit of a lame payoff. But nonetheless, they always were trying to upset my expectations, which I appreciate because it's kind of boring to be proven right all the time.
Yeah. Believe me, I know what you're saying.
I know exactly what you're saying.
So guys, before we wrap up this section of the podcast, why don't we just, is there a moment or two or just something that you want to highlight as like one of the moments that you really enjoyed watching in Star Trek Discovery Season 1. What about you, Cam?
I would say the Mirror Universe makeover in Despite Yourself.
That was like a fun sequence.
You know, the Mirror Universe stuff, we've seen the Mirror Universe a lot of times before, and we saw it wear out its welcome pretty good on Deep Space Nine. And I don't know that I really thought there was that much
Quark. I need a cloaking device, Quark.
I don't know that I thought internally that there was a whole lot of material left to mine from the Mirror Universe, but I thought they did a really good job. And because I think a lot of us, when we heard the Mirror Universe would possibly be in play in season one of Discovery, we're like, already?
Yep.
Yeah.
But I thought they did a really good job, especially in the first two episodes. But that first one, especially, where they're like giving the whole ship the makeover and Tilly has to get into Captain Killy mode and all that stuff was just a total blast.
Yep.
Jason Isaacs with the Scottish accent.
It was all great stuff. Yeah. So much fun.
What about you? Like, Dave, tell me a little
bit.
Well,
just to mirror what Cam was just saying.
Oh, jeez. Nice.
In my notes, I said Mirror Universe was really cool and it could have gone really bad.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot. I thought they did a really good job with that. I have to say what really stood out for me this season was actually just the texture of the show. Sound, lights, the sets, everything. It kind of was this brilliant departure from the sort of stale sets that of classic right. Star Trek lore, and it was just there was just a real aesthetic value to the whole season. Every episode I thought was really visually very interesting. Everything was sharp. Everything was really sort of you felt a lot more like you were in there. It didn't feel fake or stale or artificial. So that, I was really excited about that.
Including the movies, I am genuine when I say this, but I think that the production of the interiors mm-hmm. and the costuming is the best we've seen in Star Trek, period. I think they put so much thought into everything that's going on
yeah.
within the ship, the interiors. I
love the uniforms.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Fantastic.
And
yeah.
I would totally understand if somebody digs the next gen uniforms more, but you can see how much, you know, blood, sweat, and tears they put into everything here. This is not something where someone's like, good enough.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
the right. production crew are
killing
it.
Even the stuff that maybe people don't like, a lot of thought was put into
it. Oh, yes.
You know, they made choices. Yeah. So, and yeah. I appreciate that.
Even the Klingons, yeah. They certainly, they must have had a long conversation about that. And then they just made the choice.
Oh, for sure, right? Yeah.
Probably longer than the one we had on the podcast.
Yeah, oh, definitely, yeah. definitely.
You think?
Yeah, so for me, highlight of season one, and this is a problematic choice for me because the whole Ash Tyler storyline.
Sure.
I was so frustrated, unbelievably frustrated with this. But the payoff with that confrontation scene between Burnham and Tyler on the Shenzhou, the Mirror Universe Shenzhou, where Tyler slowly realizes he's actually Voke and he wants to kill Burnham. He literally tries to strangle her. They're talking, they're going back and forth. And there's no, I guess, repentance on the part of, you know, Tyler Voke, this character. That to me was like as frustrating as much as I hated that storyline up until that moment, it made it all worth it. And I just think that it was like this confrontation scene was so exquisite. I was sucked in and everything about it was great. It's what I hoped that it would be. And I don't know. I think that is the highlight for me of all of Star Trek Discovery Season 1, personally.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. There's no question about it.
Yeah, I mean, we talked earlier in this episode about how there was maybe a lack of sparks romantically between those two actors on screen. But like that scene, when it came to the heavy dramatics, those two really pulled it off. And that was just an incredible example. And yeah, like you, you know, it kind of got a little tough to ignore the Ash Tyler character's complete blank personality for several episodes in a row. But the payoff was so strong that I'm now, in you know, retroactively a little more forgiving.
That said, it's not just his blank personality. It's yeah. that you and I don't know how much of it is just us being exposed to social media, even though sure. you and I are very spoiler-averse. And I don't know about you, Dave, but like Cam and I kind of knew from very early on that Voke and Tyler were the same person. I'm yeah. wondering about what your viewing experience was. And just by default, Cam and I, we have to be on social media a lot, even though we're avoiding spoilers wherever we yeah. can. But it was all over everywhere that people had the fan theories about how Voke and Tyler were the same.
Yeah, I mean, there was no question. It was odd that Voke disappeared as a character, and then all of a sudden, sure. Ash Tyler's yeah. having Klingon flashbacks of yeah. like, I don't know if he was having sex or being tortured, and maybe yeah. it was the same thing in the Klingon universe. Nonetheless, right away, I was like, there's some connection between the two characters. Did yeah. I know that they somehow infused him? Which, by the way, let me just say, it's ludicrous. That whole thing was ludicrous to me. Like, I loved the storyline. It was stupid. It doesn't, I don't use this word lightly when I talk about sci-fi shows, because I know it's like,
right.
you know, go beyond with your imagination, things like that. But this was just too much for me. This idea of, like, infusing this Klingon into a human is just absurd to
well,
me.
Well, we've seen similar things in The Trouble with Tribbles, where it was a Klingon in like human skin undercover.
Okay.
So
I don't think you convinced Dave.
No, we've never seen it like this, though, where it's like a personality that's like implanted, though.
It was weird.
It was just weird.
It was weird.
It seemed like a lot of steps to take for the Klingons to infiltrate.
I feel like it would have made more sense if he was just brainwashed. Like I know that would have got rid of Voke, but just a human that's been brainwashed. I mean, in that universe, it's certainly not uncommon to think that brainwashing could have reached a level. You know, four lights, five lights, right?
I mean, and the thing is, we talk about how impactful the moment was where Voke came out and attacked Burnham. But the way they got rid of Voke was rather underwhelming. So
with Brain Surgeon McLaser Fingers, to call her.
All that stuff was like kind of weak, and it was like, okay, well.
No, to me, I thought it was embarrassingly bad.
Yeah.
I think we've properly segued into our next section here, which is let's talk about some of the critiques or some of the things that
Let me just say, Cole versus Burnham fight, pretty badass.
Oh, yeah, okay. that was on my list of like top moments.
Yeah. Okay.
Like,
but moving on to critiques, yeah.
Yeah, so Dave, I'll start with you. I mean, you're high on this season. You love it, but I'm sure there's a couple issues that you've got. You know, what stands out to you? Is something you didn't quite dig, or maybe something you think that they can improve on going forward in the series?
Well, definitely the way the Klingons looked, but we've discussed that. Yeah, but that was a major one for me. I felt the ending was really rushed. And I was like, she has a thermal detonator. You know, and then she's standing in like the
Wonga.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. You know, I want the Jedi. She's holding this explosive device, and she ends the war. And you know, like the way it was rushed. We talked about this, Cam, personally before, and you know, I know we're not supposed to talk about all this before the podcast happens, but listeners, me and Cam talk sometimes.
Yeah, it's true.
And we broke it down, and one of the things Cam said to me was it should have been two episodes, and I actually really think that. I think that it should have been a two-episoder, because it just made no sense that she's on this ship, taken prisoner for this long, then she somehow shows up in, what was that, the Grand Hall of the Klingon Empire?
Right.
And then in like one mediocre speech and a thermal detonator ends the whole series, like ends the season.
Yeah.
That really bothered me.
You know, yeah, to me the finale, and it's interesting, the finale is actually rated quite low on the Internet Movie Database user score. So it was definitely not the, I think, the home run, you know, going out that maybe they
It was like a double.
Yeah, like there was fun
was
stuff in it. But, you know, I look at the previous episode, The War Without, The War Within, which was like a very like serious, solemn episode, building up the characters, establishing where we were going. I was so on board for that episode. I really liked it a lot.
When you go back, doesn't that seem just more like a setup episode as opposed to something?
I knew it even at the time it was a setup episode. But it was an episode that was striking a certain tone that did not feel like it was paid off in the finale. That was just weird.
Yeah.
And like hanging out in an Orion camp watching Tilly get stoned, I'm like, okay, this really doesn't seem to feed into the previous episode very well. And the whole Klingon War was wrapped up so quickly, and the number of ships the Klingon War, you know, that were involved in that war, I don't know, maybe like four, I don't know. It's, you know, the armada that was heading towards Earth. All that stuff felt so off screen. You know, Tyler, a few, I guess it was maybe last year or whatever, when the X-Files came back for its, return six episodes.
No, that wasn't last year.
Was it not? Was it 2016?
A year before.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay, well, do you remember the final episode of that, My Struggle Part 2?
I don't want to, but yes, I do.
Where the world gets invaded, like, with, there's, like, a virus or something that takes over, like, everything. And it happens with, like, Scully in a lab just talking about it.
Yeah.
That's the way the Klingon War felt in that finale to me, where I'm like, it's so... It's just kind of characters referring to it, but I have no sense of it kind of coming into play.
That is a critique that you and I have had consistently throughout this run, where the writers relied way too much on tell and not enough on show. There was very little sense of urgency or scale with the Klingon War, except until we got to Into the Forest I Go, and actually the teaser of CV Pock and Parabellum, where they actually had like that great opening sequence with the... what was the name of the ship? The Gagarin? I think it was the Gagarin, yes. But beyond that, it was not until we got back to The War Within, The War Without that I feel that sense of scale and urgency that we should have been feeling from episode 3 onwards. Yep. And I think that was a big, big issue with Star Trek Discovery here.
Well, to be fair, they were in another universe, so we didn't have access to the information.
But they should have had it, like, before the Mirror Universe arc. Like, when I'm watching an episode like Lethe or Choose Your Pain, I should feel as if, like, the Federation could collapse at any moment, and I did not feel that way until The War Within, The War Without.
Yeah, but Tyler, I mean, that's not how the war went, though. I mean, they discovered that their key ship disappears, and then the war starts going bad for them. So.
Seemed like a pretty jolly war leading up to that.
You know, Dave, you were a big fan of the Dominion War. Like, did you feel a similar sense of sort of tension and stakes to the Klingon War?
Yeah. No. I mean, in that, when you compare the two of them, there's absolutely no question that this... I mean, I don't know why this wasn't a two-seasoner. Like, find some sort of solution that, you know, I don't know, some plot twist or something to end first season with, but drag out the war another season.
And I look at the Enterprise Zindi War arc, which was one season, like this Klingon War arc, and somehow managed to work in, you know, standalone episodes like Lone Star, as you like to reference, Tyler.
North Star.
Or sorry, North Star, yes. Yeah.
Cowboys.
Or that weird episode where Hoshi's dealing with like the psychic alien. You know, there's like
weird,
these...
I say creepy well, as that too. F, yeah.
But there are these standalone episodes throughout that are really, you know, that at least stand out throughout the season. But somehow that war feels like it has momentum, it's building, there's tension involved. Whereas the Klingon War, I spent more time going, why is there no tension?
Yeah. I feel the same way.
Like, I feel like for me personally, the show became a very successful show in the parts, but the whole was very, questionable.
So, okay, and I think that brings me to what I want to get into, and I want to make this very clear. I devote hours each week to a Star Trek podcast. I was entertained week to week by Star Trek Discovery.
Me too.
I enjoyed it, but I have a very fundamental issue with this, where I look back on season one, and I have no idea what it all adds up to. I found it narratively incredibly disjointed. I did not find it the storytelling very cohesive at all. I loved the character moments. I thought there was a lot of great moments within the series.
This series was often a triumph of character moments. Like, it established its characters in its first season better than almost every series.
But
agreed.
David, this is a question that I ask a lot of the guests, and it's not a trick question. It exemplifies my struggle with this series so far, but I can sum up Next Generation in half a sentence. It's literally the next generation of the Enterprise crew. I can say that with Deep Space Nine. What's Deep Space Nine about? Well, instead of a starship, you're on a space station. Voyager, well, what happens when you get lost? Enterprise, what happens where it's at the very beginning? Mm-hmm. What is Star Trek Discovery about? I don't know. I'm somebody who thinks about this show nonstop because we're doing the podcast, we're doing the blogs, we're doing videos. I don't know what the show is about at all. And as much as I like it, that's a real big problem for me. And I don't know what the show adds up to at this point, even as much as I like it. And I just, can you think, sum it up for me in half a sentence. What is what is Star Trek Discovery?
Discovery is when you have the opportunity to rethink a Star Trek franchise.
Okay. I mean there's a couple things you can argue. The journey of Burnham.
But that's not a premise. It's not a premise the way that Voyager is or DS9 is.
Let me get at
you. The redemption of a mutineer?
Please.
Let me come at you from the perspective of someone who doesn't spend hours. I only spend like minutes a week thinking about Star Trek.
Of course. Yeah.
I think you're coming from a very hypercritical standpoint. I think you got to, I would say
my
patience,
my girlfriend
Padawan,
would
patience.
Say the exact same
yeah,
thing.
Well,
so.
we you know, me and her have a lot in common when we talk to you. You know, we both understand that you're...
You both
you're
roll your eyes.
Long sips from our alcoholic beverages. I think you're being hypercritical of it from watching all the other Star Trek. Simply put, it was meant to, it's entertaining, like you just said.
Yeah.
It created a storyline that brought back the Mirror Universe, which we all seem to agree was pretty successful.
Mm-hmm. I don't.
Okay.
I do not, no.
Oh, okay. Well, your eyes said differently.
I will say this. I thought The Wolf Inside was great. I thought...
Despite it's really good.
Yourself was good. I think Vaulting Ambition was awful. And I think that... what was the conclusion of that arc?
What's Past is Prologue.
Yeah, I thought that was okay.
It was okay, yeah.
But the fact of the matter is you had to wrap up Lorca's reveal within 40 minutes, which I thought was unbelievably awful.
Right.
You're dropping some big adjectives on this.
Dave, what did you think of the Lorca?
Yeah.
I really liked it. Because I was thrown off by it. And I guess I always like anything that I didn't expect. And that's just for whatever reason. And maybe because I just didn't see that coming.
Right.
And maybe I should have, but I didn't. And so when it happened, I was like, this is awesome.
Listeners, you've all heard me say this before. I won't get into it too much. But my main issue is here. We've got this character that we've been invested in for what, 12, 13 episodes at this point. And he's presented as somebody who has moral ambiguity, where he's a complex character traumatized by just the ravages of war. He hates the Klingons because of what they did to his ship and his crew. And then you find out, no, it's just a facade. He has no investment in the Klingons whatsoever. He's just pretending. He's just make-believe. He's not a morally complex person. His only motivation is pure evil. He just wants to be emperor of the Terran Empire. And so whatever shades of gray that's introduced to this Prime Universe, it's all just sucked away by this plot twist that disappointed me so much, because I thought Lorca was a very intriguing character, a morally complex one, somebody that I did not think was going to be making it into season two of Star Trek Discovery at any point. But I just was so crushed by the fact that this character was not within this shade, any shades of gray. He was morally dark.
Well, I think that a lot of season one, in my opinion, season one is going to be set up, actually, like, sort of supported or buoyed up by season two. I think where they go with it is going to really dictate how we look back on season one. And, and we could say that
maiden voyage speech. I think that's the key here, and that's what I have. I'm pinning a lot of hope on season two based on that speech that he gave at the What's Past His Prologue.
But we've rarely seen any of the Star Trek series where season two is like intended to sort of bring up season one.
Right.
More often than not, season one is disjointed from the rest of them.
Yeah.
And I think that there's an opportunity right now for this, for Discovery, to have this season one, season two connection. There's going to be this nice narrative kind of flow. I mean, ideally, of course, a narrative flow between season one to season two.
Mm-hmm. Believe me, Dave, I agree with you. I'm being hypercritical.
Yes, you are, buddy.
But I think everything I'm saying, though, it's valid. It's if you look at other TV series or the way that storytelling is done, it's perfectly reasonable for me to bring up these issues, because I think one of the other critiques I'm going to make of Star Trek Discovery is that too often it wasn't focused so much on story as it was on plot, where they were trying to get, you know, characters from point A to point B to point C, which I think really did not do it any favors. And you brought it up here, just how rushed that finale felt, where they suddenly realized, oh man, we've got about like 6 minutes left.
Yeah.
Well, let's wrap this all
but
up.
Sorry to interrupt, Ty, but I got to say, like, I enjoyed the action-packed nature of it. Like, this was more than any other series was action-packed. And besides that finishing, besides that end, everything else felt, I mean, whether or not it felt organic like narratively consistent, I don't know. But I still enjoyed this sort of, every episode had this sort of punch to it, which is rare in sort of other
Share your thoughts, Kim, on the pacing. I want to hear what you think about the pacing.
Yeah, I had real issues with the pacing throughout the show, in that I don't mind a fast-paced Star Trek. I really liked the first J.J. Abrams movie, and I like Star Trek Beyond, too, which, you know, they are definitely Star Trek in, you know, boosting up the speed to kind of capture the sort of the attention
warp
of a younger
speed.
Audience. Yeah, warp speed. Yeah. But to me, with Discovery, like, I like the fast pace of a Star Trek show. We haven't quite seen that before on TV. But to me, it often felt like it was rushing through character beats or rushing through emotional moments, kind of just like not giving them kind of the breathing space they needed. Like, some of them work. Like, there's enough of them that work that you go, you know, you can tell how other ones that kind of blew past them. Like, there's the whole Stamets Culbert goodbye episode or bit in that one episode. And to me, that just feels like so blown past. Like, I'm like, I that's almost an episode I want to bask in. Like, I think of that episode, I don't know if you guys remember it. It was an X-Files episode called One Breath. Scully's in a coma.
Yep.
And it's just this fantastic episode that just kind of lets those emotions kind of unfold over an hour. Now, Discovery is so on a track to get from point A to point B to point C, it doesn't want to spend time with saying goodbye to Culbert.
Well,
I think part of that is insecurity on the part of the writers, where they're not secure enough to think like we can just take it easy for an extended period
of
time.
They feel nervous.
Yes.
And I hope that maybe the lesson they take from season one is that they have confidence that the audience is here,
yeah.
The audience likes the characters, and they don't necessarily have to burn past character moments to get to action.
Well,
even though, like, I did enjoy the action, I just wanted to say, like, you know, one thing I will give credit to the finale is that we had two episodes throughout, like, we had these two kind of mini arcs that built to very Star Wars inspired finales.
Yep.
I was a little worried that the finale of the season would also be kind of a Star Wars inspired big battle finale, which would be like, wow, we got three of those in one season.
Yep.
Because to me, the two of them that we got at the end of the Mirror Universe arc, at the one for Into the Force, they go, they were both entertaining, but they felt a little similar to me.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with the way you guys are approaching it. I guess my...
Oh, believe me, Cam and I, we are in the minority here. Like, if you look at general audience reaction, if you look at comments on social media, I think Cam and I are viewed as, like, wackos. And,
sure,
and
yeah.
Also, our Star Trek fans, friends think that we're just totally insane for having this opinion. So it's not like we're judging you on this. Like, nope, you represent mainstream.
No, you judge us, damn
yeah,
it.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I'm judging. I guess for me, the frantic nature of the pace reflected the fact that they were involved in these plot lines that required, like, picking it up and getting going. And I felt rushed, but I felt like I should be feeling rushed when I watched the shows. Like, they didn't have a lot of time. They had to get back to the universe. All these kind of big objectives were there, and they only had limited time to do it. So I felt kind of panicked and rushed in terms of all those moments. Mm-hmm. I think that season one has now given them room in season two to expand on these character moments.
I don't know, because Alex Kurtzman did an interview with Entertainment Weekly, and they asked him, you know, would next season have as fast a pace and, you know, be as serialized? He's like, yep, to both.
Yeah.
And yeah, so but that just keeps viewers. I mean, they can do what they want.
Yeah, maybe?
I believe it could be either column A or column B. I think there's, like, equal chance of either one of them. You know, the other thing that he did say is that there's strong response to CV Pacem Parabellum.
Yeah,
I would like to think what he's extracting out of that is that they're going to focus more on the kind of these episodic stories, that kind of these more Strange New Worlds sorts of things. So
yeah, definitely the Strange New Worlds. I don't know about the less the more episodic aspect.
Well,
that I have less confidence in. I think they were very happy with the serialized nature of the series.
Before we move to the next section, what is Tilly's rank?
She is now officially an ensign.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because, boy, she really got involved in a lot of senior high command stuff.
You know, she's like Nog, right?
Yeah.
Or like Icheb.
Or like every a recruit, like Crusher when he's a recruit, yet he's somehow involved in some of the most like important moments in the history of Star Trek.
It's a consistent thing throughout Star Trek.
I like how they like found ways to kind of bend over backwards to bring her in, like when you had Mirror Universe Georgiou, like, I want Killy there.
Yeah.
And that was a great scene, like, you know, Tilly coming in and like going to do the salute and Burnham be like, don't do that. Like, that is one of my highlights of the season. Like, to me, it's those comedy beats that I think
it makes it human.
Yes, I think they are a real. I think you have a cast that can really pull those moments off.
Well, she definitely brings levity, doesn't she? I mean,
she does. Yeah.
She's sort of the comic character in all of it.
Well, I think, you know, and I like the show has often a dark sense of humor too. Like, we had the eating Kelpians and stuff like that. Like, I don't know if that's humor.
I didn't like that.
I don't know at all. Like, I thought that was really uncomfortable.
Or Cole picking his teeth with like the badge. Yeah. Like, I like that the show has kind of a dark sense of humor too.
The
cannibal stuff was tough, and that wasn't the only part that they're talking about eating people. I mean, the Klingons were eating Klingons too. Like, there's a lot of cannibalism going on, and I felt that really uncomfortable.
I like that the show's willing to go there.
Sure.
To me, I appreciate.
Yeah,
very
I can
much.
Respect
and
that.
And I have a kind of a twisted sense of humor anyway.
Well,
so
the Kelpian humor I get out of it, like the eating Kelpian humor, is not what happened within that moment. I wanted to vomit, but like, well, all the memes that came out of it and like all the jokes that we've been making.
But there's also
since then.
Like the great line like on the ship about like her saying about like tough Kelpian, in the finale. Like, there is funny humor, like dark humor that comes out of that. So
I'm for it.
You know, it's different. We've never seen that in a Star Trek show.
So any final critiques or anything before we move on to the next section here?
There is one critique I want to bring up, and I do wonder how you guys feel about the Burnham issue. And that we have this character, this show is so built around Burnham that she's very much steering the ship to a certain degree. And is this causing problems?
Well, I did say earlier that...
We talked earlier about her versus Captain Saru,
Like, even if she's not correct in her execution, which we saw in the first two episodes, what we're being told, though, is she's correct in her spirit.
Yeah.
And she has the right idea. And I think it makes it very problematic if you have a main character who is always right. And it makes the show like didactic in a way that's not fun. And
good word.
Thank you very much. And
you can put away the dictionary now.
And it's actually a thesaurus.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And but the fearful part on when I'm watching is like, is there going to be this sense of like overwhelming self-importance,
right,
when she's on screen? that it's going to make it like a little hard to watch.
Right. The thing is, like, I think Sonequa Martin-Green is great. Yeah. I like the character of Michael Burnham a lot. Like, I'm not bagging on the character.
I love that her name's Michael, first of all. Just that alone is pretty cool. Yeah.
But when I'm watching that finale, and as I already harped on this before, but just there is that moment, you know, where they're going to each character, it's cutting back to her being like, yes, we are Starfleet. Like, she's cutting off other characters because the show is about her. Yeah. And sometimes I would like to focus on the other characters.
That would be awesome. Actually, there would be a nice, like, egg on her face episode. That'd be pretty cool.
Sure. Like, yeah, maybe knock out some of the self-seriousness a bit. Like, I think Burnham could be a fun character. I would like to see a little more of that in season two.
But we have to understand where she's coming from, too, right? Sure. Like, mutiny, jail, like, she has a lot. She has a huge chip on her shoulder from her own mistakes. She's carrying around a huge weight, which makes it hard for that character to then suddenly be like funny, I'm having a good time.
I look at a character like Ben Sisko, who's a captain with a lot of baggage and, you know, goes through some brutal things throughout the series. He has a lot of fun moments. There's a lot of moments where Sisko is funny or kind of has, kind of playful moments with crew members.
But what season did that start happening in?
Right away, Dave, right from episode one.
No, there's no way.
No, it does take a while.
He just wanted to kill Picard the entire first season.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
I just think that Star Trek works best as an ensemble, and it works best when it's more episodic. Well, and both of those are not features that we really saw in season one of Discovery.
Right.
But that said, it's still number two in my list of best Star Trek seasons. So, guys, why don't we mosey on over to our kind of wrap up here? But like, where do we want to see Discovery go in season two? And I kind of alluded to it. I don't have any story ideas or plot points yet, writers. But
they don't want to hear about your Mugatu arc.
Mugatu.
But it's the entire season.
Yeah. Oh, man.
It's like, that's the best.
He joins the crew.
It's like Mugatu's in the mist.
So good.
But I want to see the series become more episodic because the highlight for me was magic to make the sanest man go mad. And I think that was the most episodic episode that we saw throughout season one. And I think that was such a strength of the series, where we weren't beholden to all these plot threads about the Klingon War that we weren't even all that invested in. We were instead focusing primarily on character throughout the episode. And it was such a great ensemble because, it was a Burnham episode, but we also had so much of the weight being carried by Stamets in that one.
Sure.
Tyler had a huge part in that.
Rainn Wilson got to do a lot of stuff as Harry Mudd. Yeah.
Even just think about, like, Jason Isaacs with still don't give a damn.
Sure. Like, and the Lorca death montage.
Everybody had so much to do in that. I think that's what they need to do more, is make it more of an ensemble, make it more episodic. And like, I don't want to be one of those Star Trek fans who's like, you need to make the series that I remember, the series that was like the
or
old
the series,
series
that I want.
I know. Yeah. I want Star Trek to evolve, but I'm looking at what its strengths were in season one, and I can pinpoint all of that in Magic. And I think that's where they need to go, is make more episodes like Magic. I don't mind like an ongoing serialized story arc, but I would make that more the B plot for the vast majority of the episodes, and have a very, very specific A plot that you could point to that is not necessarily tied to the serialized arc that we're going to get next season.
Dave?
I agree with that, actually. I think there's a lot of room for... the episodic kind of approach in season two. Where do I want to see them go? That's really difficult because I already got my war.
Where no man has gone before.
Dave, we already gave our thoughts, but how did you feel about that cliffhanger where we're seeing, the Pike Enterprise? Like, what kind of inspiration did that moment give you for what you'd like to see in the future?
I mean, honestly, it's going to be just a temporary kind of like little way to start off season two. So I never really factored it into like what I want to see from season two. I guess perhaps it's always fun to see other people from the universe come in. It'd be interesting to see how they introduce actual actors and like real life people in. You talked about Michael Dorn. I don't know how. Well, do you think Michael Dorn's character, like, do you think Worf would be alive? Because don't the Klingons live for quite a long time too?
Worf would not be born at this point, but we do know from Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, that one Colonel Worf, his grandfather...
Oh, right, in the trial.
Yeah, was out and about during this time period. Oh, so, cool. Who was played, of course, by...
By Dorn.
There you go.
Yeah, I have to say, I guess in this question, I'm kind of stumped. I don't know. Right. I don't know what I want to see from the next... I was really happy with this first season, so maybe I'm set up for disappointment.
Yeah, for me, like I don't really have a great care as to what they do as an overall narrative arc. As long as it's something that is a little more thought out than the Klingon War, and I think the Klingon War really did fall victim to the fact that there was a lot of, you know, tumult going on behind the scenes for season one. Like, I don't think it's the fault of the current showrunners that season one turned out the way it did. I think there was a lot of baggage with a lot of exec producers and Brian Fuller, of course, going. So I'm looking forward to seeing their version of, you know, a season of Discovery that's not completely compounded by all these sort of complications.
A continuity in the production staff and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but I can actually kind of justify how this Klingon War ended up in that, like, the original plan was to go to the Mirror Universe much earlier on.
Yeah.
So we weren't actually going to be spending all that much time within the Prime Universe while the Klingon War was initially going on. And that's what our big issue was. Like, during the initial stages of this Klingon War, we didn't find that there's many kind of much urgency or stakes to, you know, get entangled with here. But if they had actually begun with the Mirror Universe arc earlier on, we would have come back where I think the war would have been going very badly for their Federation. We would have spent a longer period with this very scary kind of Klingon war.
Sure, yeah, that would have been cool.
That would have been, because I think that when we returned from that, with the war within, the war without, I think that was the intensity that we all wanted this whole time.
So. Yeah, I agree. But I do hope that maybe they pay attention and notice that when you look at social media and you know, and see what the fans are posting, they're posting tributes to specific characters and moments. That's the stuff that they're really digging. You know, Stamets and Culber obviously have gotten a huge wave of support, but also Tilly. And Ash Tyler's become very popular too. Like,
it's all in the name.
Sure. Fans, Ash, yeah, I know. fans are really rallying behind the characters. They aren't rallying behind, like, remember C.V. Packham Parabellum?
Yeah.
It's like they love the characters and these fun moments involve, you know, the characters are involved in. That's true to, like, all of the Star Trek series. Look at all the Picard memes that are tied to specific gestures that, you know, Patrick Stewart did, or that Riker did, or that Kirk did, Spock. I would like to see in season two them just, like, relax a little bit and let the characters kind of steer the ship a bit.
I
think this, like, this fast-track plotting is... I think it works in as much as it gets fans talking, like, where's this going? Where's this going? But I don't think it leads to a very satisfying result if you get an ending like you got with this one.
I 100% agree. I just want them to spend more time just breathing.
Yeah.
And I think they've already proven that when they do that, it's extremely successful. So why not go back to the well that's already proven successful and something that they are very good and very adept at doing? I'm down with that.
Yeah, I have no demands in terms of what aliens I want to see or villains or anything like that, other than the Mugatu.
Of course. Yeah. How long do you think they're going to spend with the whole 1701 arc, though? Is that like 2-3 episodes and then that's
barely,
it?
Barely that.
Well, the Mirror Universe was 4 episodes. Do they do 4? Maybe?
I don't see this as...
How?
I don't know.
Two ships just... side by side for 4 episodes?
Did you ever think you'd spend 4 episodes in a row in the Mirror Universe?
Well, I mean, there's much more going on there.
Sure, that's true.
I feel like this is just a setup for the opening episode of next season, and they'll be gone. That'll be it.
Well, ultimately, it is a distress call. So what is the distress call about?
True,
so
yeah.
That's what the first few episodes will be about.
Who's playing Pike?
Don't know. Don't know if he's even on the show. We know nothing.
Huh.
They don't start filming until April. So we'll get some casting news, although they were pretty locked down on casting for Star Trek Discovery even before the show premiered.
Yeah,
like we weren't getting anything. They were the ones revealing it.
They did announce Rainn Wilson quite early, didn't they?
Yeah, but that's fairly early. That's a pretty good PR move.
But I would think they would probably advertise a Pike fairly early as well, just to get people pumped up. So that would be my guess.
Pumped up Pike fans.
Do you think there was a lot of pumped up Harry mainstream Mudd viewers who were like, oh yeah, Harry Mudd, I can't wait.
Mainstream Mudd fans.
Yeah. Yeah, there's lots of those out there. Yeah. No, they're marketing that directly to the Trek fans. So I could see them hyping a Pike casting choice.
Okay, what about Dr. Boyce?
That's me specifically. If they want to just get me excited, you got to cast Dr. Boyce.
Okay.
So
what about that woman with the pixie cut?
Whose name you can't recall, can
exactly.
you? I can't either. Okay. No, that doesn't really do anything for me.
I'm down for number one.
Sure. One's a character
I'm
really
excited
want
to see,
more.
See yeah. number one. Dave, you excited about number one in Captain Pike?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, I am. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm
Dr.
excited.
Boyce.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it all. I'm trying to think. I'm trying to go through my head right now who I'd love to see. It'd be interesting, but I mean...
Spock?
You know what bums me out? We saw Scott Bakula in Vegas.
That doesn't bum me out. He's
no,
awesome.
No. He's awesome. But he was asked kind of if he could appear on Star Trek Discovery, and he kind of gave this kind of vague kind of like, well, we'll see.
Is he a retired admiral by this point?
I think he's
or
dead.
A dead admiral.
Oh, is he dead?
But I would love to see Scott Bakula like on a view screen or something.
Well, okay. So, I remember that.
Yeah.
And he had said, this is the year before Discovery premiere. And he's like, yeah, I've been having conversations with Brian Fuller. He's been showing me a lot of like preliminary artwork.
Yeah.
And he explained to me how there's potential for Archer to be in this. And I think I can be in this. And I was like, okay, I guess Archer's going to be in this. And nope. And then we also got the Dorne story about how Fuller was meeting up with Michael Dorn.
But you could be right. It could be his what was that, like his grandpa?
Yeah.
Yeah, but, and I think even Brent Spiner came out with a story about how Fuller had met up with him and they were going to do like a CG Data or something.
Oh,
like,
that does ring a bell.
Yeah. Yeah.
How would that even be possible?
I don't know.
Like Dr. Soon isn't even born yet.
I think, actually, if you look at how old he looks based in...
he's a swinging 85 right now.
Yeah, yeah. He's like Professor Farnsworth from Futurama. But Brian Fuller wanted a lot of like old school fan favorite cameos in this. And you and I were actually convinced for whatever reason that Jeffrey Combs was going to be appearing as Tran.
I honestly thought Archer was going to be in like the first episode because they've always had this, you know, with Next Generation on having a sort of a classic character show up in the pilot and kind of pass the baton.
Who passed the baton in this one? Was it Sarek? Was that it?
Yeah, I guess that's
the reference. Yeah, that's the only one that makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He is in the first episode, so yeah, I guess.
Did you guys
sense.
Like him?
Yeah.
I grew into him. I didn't like him at first, but
I think the actor was a good choice. Well casted.
I was fonder of him than Cam was, but then, like you said, Cam, you grew into him more.
Right.
I think, and I'm intrigued by whatever we get with the whole 1701 story, because I don't know how you put Sarek on the Discovery with Burnham and not have some sort of Spock element at
play. That's what I was wondering. Like, isn't there, like, would there not be some sibling rivalry at some point? Or, like, what is their relationship, or is there one?
I don't think they have much of a relationship.
Like, Spock's gone. He's already on the Enterprise. He's already... No, wait.
I think he's also much younger than Burnham. And so, I don't think...
At this point?
Yeah. Probably, like, a decade apart.
Oh.
And so, I don't think they had much of a relationship growing up. I wonder what the relationship is between Cybok and Burnham. That's what I really want to find out, though.
And no one else does.
Cybok. That'd be awesome to bring Cybok back. Well,
why not? Well, why not?
Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Join the discussion over on our Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. This week, we will be throwing up some blogs ranking each Discovery episode. Tyler and I are each going to do one. So check those out and see how much they conflict with one another. I think it's going to be very interesting to see.
Cam, you're way more of a fan of CVPOC and Parabellum than I ever suspected.
No, but I am a bigger fan of the Butcher's Knife. I think it's going to be very interesting to see.
Uh-huh.
And of course, we'll also have a video up this week as well. Tyler, what are we doing next week?
Cam, we are going to tackle this Starfleet's bad apples. We've got a lot of examples, one Lorca included, of just Starfleet officers that... you kind of wonder how they make it through the ranks and so high up and whether they really belong in the Star Trek universe. So, Cam, I'm excited because, again, we get to start integrating Star Trek Discovery within these, you know, week-to-week podcast episodes that we do. And tackling the misdeeds of some of the Starfleet officers.
Matt Decker, you're up.
Oh, we'll bring him up, but there's so many others that it'll be really fun for us to have. good discussion.
Awesome.
On the podcast, yeah.
So you can also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Vulcan goodbye to season one Discovery Smith.
I love that. Okay. You can find me at Reportin. That's R-E-P. P as in pumping up Pike. O-R-T-O-N. David, where can we find you?
You can always find me at Doc Boris. It's at D as in Discovery. O-C-B-O-R-Y-S.
And you have a podcast of your own.
I do, Cam. Thanks for mentioning it. I really appreciate that.
You told me I had to.
He would not have come on our podcast otherwise.
It's cheap publicity here for all your 14,000 followers. yes, I do have a podcast. I know it's a bit of a step out of the Star Trek universe, but it's back into the real universe of Canadian history. It's called Cool Canadian History, and you can find it on all your podcast streaming devices.
I've listened to it many a time.
As Dave, have I.
It's enjoyable.
Thank you.
And I'm not nearly the way you are, but I am a bit of a history buff.
I could see
and
that.
And I love just diving into it, and I like learning new things, and especially cool things.
Thanks, buddy.
About Canada.
Right, well, I like learning cool things about Star Trek.
When's your Shatner tribute episode?
Oh, it's coming. We're thinking about it for. Actually, I think you and me were talking.
We were talking about Jimmy
Doohan. Yeah, Doohan.
Yeah.
We got to do some. Maybe we'll do like a Shatner Doohan thing in the same episode.
Oh wow!
Wait, don't forget Nicole DeBoer.
Well, we could just do Canadians in Star Trek.
Nicole DeBoer. There's your episode right there.
Bruce Greenwood. Some other Canadians.
Is there a Canadian on the current?
Yeah, who played
Cole?
Cole. Or Demers, as well as Arium, Bryce, Reese, they're all Canadian.
Holy moly.
Holy smokes.
Pretty much the bridge crew, except the people in the main cast, they're all Canadian.
But like you said, it was filmed in Canada, so they get tax credits if they cast
Exactly.
Canadians.
And that's also kind of explains why they only have like one line each per episode. So
very tragic.
It's very Canadian. We're too polite to ask for more lines.
Maybe they'll get two lines next season. Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.